2 Radio. I'm your host, Jackie Campbell, and it's my absolute pleasure to interview each of our members so you can get to know them just that little bit better. Now there's power in data, but you can't take data just as data when we're small business owners. The numbers themselves, bits of this and bits of that, don't actually mean anything until you turn them into information. They can be really, really overwhelming, and you just end up with garbage in, garbage out, unless you have someone like Colin, who runs a business called DataSift that can get in there, get it all organized, and make it all make sense. At least that's what I think he does. Welcome, Colin.
Thank you.
And I've got that completely backwards, haven't I? You don't have a thing like that at all.
Not completely backwards. We do take people's data, and it all starts with, you know, getting to know someone, getting to know their business, because data is very bespoke to any business. Mm-hmm. Some of it is must have because of obligations of compliance, like taxation and stuff like that. Some of it is nice to have, because it's useful for marketing purposes, knowing who your demographic is, where they are, all those sorts of things. And then there's all various stuff in between and around. And data is, in the world, is just everywhere. It's on the web all the time. You know, how many times do you look up when a TV program's on, or what the interest rate is, or what the exchange rate is, what the time is in Istanbul? It's all over the place. And we take that data and help people to make sense of it by avoiding the repetition that people have to go through. If you just take something as simple as the monthly finance cycle, people drawing up accounts and charts, diagrams, all that sort of stuff for, a board pack, they go through the same routine every month, and a lot of it is finding the data, maybe printing a report, copying and pasting that data into another spreadsheet, all that sort of stuff. They spend days doing all that. So it's tedious, it's repetitive, and it's pressurized at certain times of the month. You know, at the end of the month, though, when there's buckets to do, you've got to get it all done because the boss wants it done by a certain deadline and all that sort of stuff.
Because there's a meeting to be had and a report to be done.
Absolutely.
And again, it's that data, because then they need it to be information, yep. And from the information you make decisions.
So what we do is we make that easy for people. And we do that in a number of ways. We can literally suck the data out of just about any database into Excel and then make it look very pretty. We do use software tools to do that, but basically that is it in essence. We go to a person's place and we say, okay, what is it you need to know? For example, you could be a wholesaler selling pharmaceuticals and you're really not sure what your most profitable lines are, what your least profitable lines are. So we can tell you what that is. So you can focus your salespeople on the more profitable stuff so you make more money. We can also say to you, do you really want those less profitable lines? The old 80-20 rule comes into play. Or it could be something like looking at the distribution points for a salesperson. Maybe salesperson A for a long time has been praised as being the best salesman in the business because he's got the most sales. But when you break down those sales in other ways, there are big holes in his sales portfolio in terms of brands. Maybe he's got much less distribution points than other salespeople. So he's got less physical customers, but he's got a couple of big ones that make him look great.
So you effectively, he's selling 100,000 widgets to two people, whereas you might have somebody else who's got 30 different clients they sell, but sell a lesser volume.
Exactly.
I would have thought once you know that, you would realise that the person with the 100,000 widgets to two people is actually a higher risk portfolio than
Correct.
Someone who's got a much broader base.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
You lose one of those customers and there's a big hole in your financials, whereas the other guy has got the better spread. So then it's about managing that short spread into a longer spread, helping him to diversify. But in the same breath, you'd like your guy who's got, say, 30 customers, 100 customers, to bring the volume of those customers up to help you in that way as well. So it's all about pointing out what's going on. And we can do things like, say, customer wants to launch a new product, let's say it's new red toffee. So what would we do to help them? Well, we'd track their sales of toffee through the various varieties and then come up with a forecast form that would say, we reckon that this is the price point you should be selling at, this is the volume you should be aiming for, and this is where we think it's going to go. And it's all, should we say, scientific, rather than just finger in the air and let's launch it, see what happens.
And so you could probably come up with something which says, like, actually, you know what, red toffee, no. But if you went the orange and the green with a strawberry flavour, you'd be onto something more useful.
Mm.
Okay.
And where it all comes together is a lot of people spend time looking at their numbers and maybe their sales and things like that, but very few people join data together. Mm. And we're able to run reports that, say, pull data from 6, 8, 10 different places. So some of the data could come from the web, like interest rates, exchange rates and stuff like that. Some of it could come from the chief exec's secretary has a little database she keeps on the employees. Some of it could come from there. Some of it can come from the accounts package, the CRM package. They're not necessarily joined up, but we can actually pull all the data and make sense of it as it interrelates. Mm-hmm. And they start to see things like, hang on, every time we take on a customer that's in, say, the health sector, we make more money than if it's in, say, the finance sector. So let's concentrate our marketing on the health sector.
And then you can use that information, I suppose, for targeted marketing, which makes it more effective, be it your Facebook dynamics or your print media or whatever else.
Yeah, data is omnipresent these days. We're becoming a data-led society. Big data is a big buzzword at the moment, and that's what puts most small businesses off.
Big data. What is big data?
Big data is a term used for the massive data warehouses held by people like the ANZ Bank, who know everything about you.
I was talking to someone earlier today, and they were saying that Facebook now, it's really moved from social media into data collection, and that they can have up to 10,000 different points of data, which is you, what you like, what you have for breakfast, who you're talking to, what you're commenting on. From a small business point of view, you can access that through your Facebook insights, and behind, once you've got that information, use that to target the correct, put the right product in front of the right people. But you're right, data is the fundamental key to all of that.
It's why the big guys are big, because they spend time, they spend huge money analysing data and working out what the next big move is, which is why they always seem to get it right, because they spend that time and that effort in analysing what has worked in the past. And that really is where SMEs fall down at the moment. And because of this term big data, they think, well, I'm not big. I haven't got big data.
Oh, I can't afford to get access to that, or I don't understand how it goes together and all that sort of kind of stuff.
They just assume it's the realm of the big guys and it's too expensive and all that. But it's not. It's not.
So how do you get into big data or analysis like you're doing now? It's not like you woke up one morning and went, I know, I'm going to go and sift data. I mean, that's not sort of something a person thinks of, really.
No, I mean, I can remember when I left school, it was like, what did I want to do? And as a young chap, I thought, oh, I've got ambitions for material things. And I love cars. So I thought, where can I get a free car? Oh, I know, I'll be a salesman. but of course, you get the old thing, you haven't got any experience, so you can't be a salesman. And if you haven't been a salesman, you can't get any experience. So the old chicken and egg thing. So I kept trying and trying and trying. And eventually what happened was I got offered 4 jobs all at once. And I thought, which one shall I take? Well, being a young bloke, it'll be the one that pays the most, in those days, pounds. So, okay, I'll have that one, thank you. And that landed me in the treasurer's department of a shire council in the UK.
Okay, so hang on, I'm going to stop you there. What does the treasurer's department in the shire of the UK sell that it needs a salesman?
Nothing. I didn't become a salesman. I became a numbers person.
Okay, so sales was a good idea. You ditched the car for the numbers.
Jackie, I'm ashamed to admit that I sold my body for pounds, basically. I went to the highest bidder.
Okay, so ditched the sales, ditched the cars and went for the highest bidder.
Yeah, and the highest bidder was the county council. And the job was quite fun. It was payroll. So good grounding for a junior numbers person, but I was such a nosy person that the internal audit department took a shine to me and said, do you want to come and work for us?
Well, at least they didn't take a shine to you and go, excuse me, sir, what are you up to?
But then I got a badge. I got a shiny badge that said I could go anywhere, do anything, look at anything.
It was this is exciting. Why I work in health and safety, because you can look and go anywhere and ask any question that you want.
Yeah, when you say, hey, I want to go there, people can't say no. They're not allowed to.
But they do go, oh dear, gracious me, can you come next week?
Yeah. So that's how it all started. And they had this system. I can't remember exactly how it worked, but it was called the Deke Inquiry System. And I, as a junior, got lumbered with this, interrogating a database to basically come up with lists of things that the internal audit team needed to prioritize.
So you're looking for red flags?
Looking for red flags. And one of my favorite red flags to look for, and if any of you guys are listening now, you're probably not, you're probably passed on, so thank heavens, but caretakers in schools were my favourite target. I used to draw up these charts of who spent the most on cleaning materials per square metre of school. So they would
target... This isn't geeky at all. Please carry on.
Okay, so they would go in and investigate who, why these people were spending so much.
So you've got this little teeny tiny school in St Ives that all of a sudden has got a, you know, a $2,000 per square metre budget for Windex.
Sort of thing. So we'd go, something not right with that. So we'd go and investigate. And in some cases, there were...
Very grubby eggs, students.
Right? There were there were bad eggs in the system. And there's one particularly famous one. My colleague went to a place called Blackbush Market. It was a famous Sunday market. And there was the school caretaker selling literally Windex from a market stall. So some were bad, some were good, you know, like a caretaker we couldn't work out what he was spending the money on. Then we realised he was literally every night kicking over a 25-gallon drum of polish on his school floor, you know, his beautiful wooden floor, so that it would look immaculate. And he was doing that all the time and overspending badly. So,
but for the right reason. He was genuinely spending the money on the product, though he was definitely overcleaning. And you might have had some schools which are just very grubby.
Yeah. So that's, in a nutshell, how it started. I then moved into internal audit in private company, and from there into management accounting, and so on and so forth.
So what's management accounting?
It's basically accounting directed at the management of a company. So it's an aid to making decisions.
Okay. Rather than working for an accounting firm that does tax returns.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So generally speaking, your CPA public accountant types do tax returns and compliance work like BASs and stuff. Management accountants draw up accounts where we work on ratios, if you like. Sales per FTE and things like that to advise management, hey, you've got too many people for the level of turnover or not enough people, because if you have too few, you get stress. Those sorts of things. And I progressed through various industries. I jumped into smaller companies and I became the person that was always in the office because I was the accountant. So then people said, you know what, you can look after the IT as well.
It's like when you sit too close to the photocopier. If it runs out of paper, the first thing they say, oh, do you know where the paper is? It's like, do I look like the secretary?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, good. So
Same drift.
So you've now got this IT aura about you by default.
Yeah, except for the fact I knew nothing.
Nothing about IT?
Nothing really about IT. I mean, I had a computer at a very early age, but I wouldn't call myself tech literate. So, of course...
Your first piece of advice was, have you turned it off and on again?
Pretty much.
Default question.
I literally had to go through quite a steep learning curve. I taught myself how to cable buildings. I taught myself how to run what was Microsoft NT server back in those days like that. So, got all that under my belt. And then it became a realization, hang on a minute, numbers plus data equals you know everything.
Aha.
Eureka moment. Yes. And then I moved into positions whereby I was the translator. So I would sit between finance and IT. Finance would talk in finance speak and talk about, you know, rates of return and da 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 da. IT would talk about double flip-flop memories, and I'd be able to translate between the two. It was quite fun being a translator.
So you became the Babel Fish of small industry.
Yeah, so basically I put in huge amounts of ERP systems, which are all basically based on a database, so I got to know what a database is, does, and how to manipulate them. And then from that, somebody one day said, you know, I really wish I could do this or this and get it into Excel. And I said, oh, that's easy. And I did it and wrote a little VBA macro that basically you pressed a button and it refreshed the data. And somebody went, mate, that's gold. And I went, really? Oh, so you just saved me weeks of work. Oh, okay. And then whilst I used that in my job, I didn't market that. And then over years, you know, you realise that, oh, it is quite valuable because everywhere you go, people go, wow, how did you do that?
And then you go, shh, I'm not telling you.
And then basically I spent a year in Hong Kong, a contract in Hong Kong back in 2015. And when I came back in 2016, I kind of went, okay, I'll go and get myself a job. But looked around the job market, it was kind of like, there's not a lot around, is there? Because the mining boom had all collapsed, and what was I going to do? Oh dear, woe is me. So I thought, well, okay, I'll take a year off, and I'll go and do something for me, which I did. And then when I came back a year later, I looked at the job market and went, uh-oh, it's still bad.
It's still rubbish.
So
I'm
what
take another
can I
year
do?
Off.
This skill that I've got, hey, let's sell it. Let's market it. So I knew enough people in the BI space, you know, people who dealt with software like Tableau, ClickView, Cognos, Sage Intelligence. There are a myriad of them out there. Spotfire, there's tons. They all work slightly differently, and they're all good at certain things. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, I'm ideally placed because I know what their good points and bad points are. So that's basically now what I do. I help people find the right software at the right price point. So you don't try and sell Cognos, which, you know, is $50,000 before you get out of bed, to somebody who's only got a 1 million turnover company. That's just crazy. So you fit the product to the customer and their needs, and then basically help them get the best out of it. And I've got this really ethical belief that if I turn up at a customer and they say to me, oh, this is what I want you to do, and I look at it and think, well, what they're going to spend on the software and me is not worth them doing, I will just say to them, look, at this moment in time, I can't help you, but I will keep in touch if that's okay, because as you grow, I know I'll be able to help. Or we do things. The latest gig is reporting as a service.
Right.
So I've got the software, I've got copies of the software. So if I can have remote access to someone's data, I can write the reports. And once the report, the effort goes into writing the report, thereafter every month, if you want me to run that report, it's just a couple of $100. And you can have that same reporting month in, month out. So I can send you a PDF of a 100-page management pack for your board meeting that's taken me little or no effort to generate for you, because I've just pulled all the data out and manipulated it and created all that report stuff for you, and there you go.
And you don't have your normal staff running around like headless chickens at the last minute attempting to do this, do that, make it look pretty, make it go green, and what the hell's happened to the formatting there, and now it doesn't print, and I can't get access to this, and I can't do that, and the world ends.
And I think there's a gap in the market. I think the gap is you've got your traditional CPA practice accountant who's looking after companies extremely well with tax and GST type advice, compliance, if you like. Mm-hmm. And I fully support those guys in what they do. I have no interest in becoming a tax accountant. Thank you very much.
Do what you love. Outsource the rest.
Yeah. When you're a small business, you grow to a certain point and you might employ a bookkeeper, might be part-time, might be full-time. But then there's a massive leap of faith to go from bookkeeper to accountant to get what I call pucker monthly management accounts. Mm. A big leap of faith. I mean, accountants aren't cheap people. So that salary bill is a scary one for business owners. But most of them recognise the fact that the bookkeeper can't take them all away.
Mm.
And they know that what the bookkeeper gives them each month, when the accountant does the accounts at the end of the year, the position changes dramatically. The bookkeeper maybe doesn't do depreciation and things like that. Mm. So, of course, there's a difference. So they know that there's a value in having accurate accounts and cash flows and stuff, but they can't afford the person full time. Well, hey, DataSelf can help them on that as well.
Do I need to know what I need to have a conversation with you?
No, you don't have to know per se what you need, but you do need to know your business. As long as you know your business, there will always be things that are giving you pain. Always.
So I can come to you and I can go, Con, I need to understand what my salesmen are doing and what's working for them. And then you can say, okay, cool, we can do that. Need to know this, this, and this bits of data, and I can bring them together. And I can go, I've got that and that. What's that? And you can say, this is how that gets generated. Or you might find that there's a gap in the data I'm collecting. Can you have that conversation with you to help us develop our business?
You can. And also things like real world examples. If you're a not such a small business, you've got to the stage where you've got, say, three or four people out on the road selling for you. Those people call on existing customers, on new customers, and they basically say, hi, I'm Joe from such and such, and I'm here to talk about your lines that you're selling. Now, that's a better conversation when they go armed with information. Mm. So,
you know, the chocolate bars are doing really well this time. Had you thought of blah, blah, blah?
Exactly. Uh-huh. So for this particular area of the country that I specialise in, this is the best-selling line that makes my customers the most profit. And I notice you're not stocking it. Would you like some samples? Or would you like to do a deal on sale or return? So we'll push some stock out to you. You can see if you can sell it. And if you can, then you pay for it. If you can't, then you send it back, sort of thing. No risk to you.
I suppose you immediately go, hang on a minute, this person gets my area, they know, understand my business.
Exactly.
I'm more happy to trust what you have to say, or at least have that conversation, rather than just coming up the door and goes, do you want a special watch? I'm selling widgets.
Yeah, makes the salesperson so much more powerful, you know, when they know the customer's business. So you could go into a customer and say, hey, I've noticed that 6 months ago you were buying this particular item, but now you're not. So why has that stopped? You know, maybe, for example, there's a competitor who has moved in and started selling that customer something. You get to spot those things stopping. So, you know, another real life example that we've done a lot of is detailed sales analysis where people can drill down into it. So basically it says, these are your five sales territories. This is what they're all doing sales. This is the budget. This is whether you're up or down. That's all simple. But then they get to click a button and get to see the detail underneath that. So which brands are driving that growth? Which lines within those brands? You know, which sizes? All that sort of stuff. And once people spend time looking at that month by month, they get to know their business in intimate detail, and then that drives the right growth. So they think, hey, every time we stock the color brown, it sells like hotcakes. So whenever a new line comes in, the first thing they say is, have you got it in brown? Because they know that works for them.
Cool. So if you've got this information, obviously you can do something super exciting with it, or not, depending on where you're going with it. And based on your journey, obviously, you've been through that. You know what the data means. You know what the how it all goes together based on your journey to get to where you've got to. Obviously, it's not like something you just woke up and started to do. There's a very sensible backstory to what you do. So you're great from an advice point of view, as in, yes, this works. Yes, that doesn't work. I understand retail. I understand how service industries work. And you don't have to buy it outright or have it special. You can do it for us. If we just give you access to our databases, effectively, you can produce these reports and and customise them for what we're trying to understand.
Yeah, I can basically help the business owner to understand their own people, their own markets. Quite often we do reveal truths in the business that the owner is not aware of. Mm-hmm. So the owner, for example, might say that Jemima is their most productive member of staff, right? That's their opinion. And when we do the numbers, that's not reality. And the reason their opinion is that way is Jemima is a lovely, lovely person and constantly says how she enjoys working for the organisation, and that makes the owner feel good, and that tends to blur that, you know, objective nature of a human being into being more subjective. And, oh, she's so nice, you know, I really like her being around, therefore she's the best. And then you find out that little Agnes, who sits in the corner and says nothing, her figures are three times...
Well, it depends what you're after in your business as well. Yeah. If you can't work with Agnes, then well. Yeah. Okay, cool. So this all this stuff can come together and you can really make a difference to people's bottom line because they've suddenly got information about their business, what they're doing, how that it works and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. We do a lot of stuff as well that catches mistakes. So you can have something that runs every day and sends you effectively an email of all those things that are below your profitability expectations. So where maybe you've got a salesman who's offering a bit too much discount, or there's been a mistake in invoicing or whatever, it will flag it.
Zero missing from the end. Yeah.
Yeah. And that does happen.
Mm.
Yeah, errors, you can pick up discrepancies. So someone's got a CRM system which has customer details in it and an account system that has customer details in it, and they're not linked. Maybe the reason they're not linked is that the finance department isn't happy with the sales department's standard of housekeeping.
Never happen.
But the boss man says, finally, right, we want to integrate these two systems so that what happens over here gets recorded over there. But how do you get the data to align before you merge them? And the answer is simply you have to do comparative reports from two systems, and then one becomes the source of the truth, and then you amend the other one to agree before you merge the two.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of work we do with implementation companies moving data. So someone's got a system and they're moving to a new system. Obviously, they don't want to rekey all that data. So we can extract it out of one system and upload it into another.
Give it a bit of a clean and make sure it's neat and tidy before
run it by someone and say, look, these are all the ones with missing postcodes or missing telephone numbers or missing emails or whatever, so that they can get the data cleansed before they go on to the next platform. I mean, the uses of data are endless. You can tell anything from data. A bit like statistics.
Yeah.
There are lies, damn lies, and statistics.
So the people there who are listening have got this. They want to have a conversation with you about the data and going, hang on a minute, can you make this work for me better? How do I use this? Is there some options out there? What's the best way they can get hold of you?
The best way they can get hold of us is either drop us an email at info@datasift.com.au or give us a bell. Jump onto our website, datasift.com.au. It's got all the details of how to get in touch. Yeah, we're always happy to talk to people. And you don't have to know how data can help you. That's our job. Our job is to help you find your way through the data maze. So, you know, if someone wants to catch up for a coffee, that's great.
Yep.
We'll have a coffee and you can tell me about your business and I'll think about the data that goes behind that. You don't have to do that. And I'll say, do you do this? Do you do that? And if the answers are all yes, 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 I'll say, mate, you're doing really well for a small business. And we'll still catch up for a coffee occasionally, but I won't bother you or won't try and sell you anything because you don't need anything.
Fantastic. We need someone who can get us on the right path or even just validate what we're doing, give you a call, drop you an email, and then coffee's the word.
Yeah, we're nerds. We love data. Bring it.
Thank you, Colin.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on District 32 Radio. If you'd like to know more, please head across to our website, district32.com.au.